Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Alex Schumacher. Here in Minnesota, winter is inescapable. From polar vortexes to getting inch after inch of snow, there is absolutely no way to forget about winter. Nonetheless, here on this episode of Real College Podcast, we're going to offer you, if not escapes, then at least brief breaks that people use to try to make the best and forget about winter, if just for a second. Sculptures, saunas, curling, and more here on Real College Podcast. For whatever reason, for decades now, certain Minnesotans have been gathering in often below-freezing temperatures to turn giant blocks of compressed snow into beautiful sculptures. Now, I don't know about you, but I would not be up for that. Well, here's Murray Swanson talking to people who do this every year and about what they get out of it.
Minnesotans are known for withstanding the cold. They're built harder to deal with the plummeting temperatures and cutting wind chill. And I, as a non-Minnesotan, find it a true spectacle to pretend it's not deathly cold outside and to go out and have fun when it's 0 degrees Fahrenheit. The State Snow Sculpting Competition is an annual event where competitors get an 8x8x8 foot block of compacted snow and 2 days to carve it into anything they can imagine. Myself, Nathan, Chloe, and Miranda went to go and see the creations.
Sure. We're at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds for the State Snow Sculpting Competition. This is myself, Dan Ross, and my brother-in-law, Weston Johnson. And we're one of the team's Snow Van Gogh.
What's your sculpture today? What's it going to be?
Our sculpture is titled Cowboy Bath. And what we've got is a log cabin. So we're working on the outside of it right now. And on the inside, we've got a cowboy sitting in a metal tub, taking a bath, a little potbelly stove.
And how many years have you guys been doing this type of thing?
I joined the team a couple years after they started. I think this is probably my fourth or fifth year. It's probably your guys' seventh or eighth?
Seventh year we've been doing this.
And what is it about it that you like so much that keeps you coming back?
It gives you something to do in the cold, for one. It gets you out of the house, but it's just fun being creative. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to use your head and be creative and, just try to problem solve. And honestly, like all these groups here, we met with them on Thursday night for like a welcome dinner. We see them once a year and it feels like you just were hanging out yesterday. Mm-hmm. So great camaraderie. There's a couple teams here that have been doing this 25 plus years. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of them, it's like if now the kids are in their 20s or 30s and they've joined the teams. So it's pretty cool that they've got like kind of generations doing this.
Yeah. Are there any like newbies who'll come through and just like... They'll be all confident and then they'll just get crushed.
I think that's everybody. I think everybody has way too much confidence on day one, and then you go home and you fall asleep 2 seconds after coming in the door because you're so tired and sore. But we've had a couple teams that it was their first year and they won by a mile. So they kind of changed the competition. There's a House of Thune is over there, and Dusty came in, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, and he blew everybody out of the water, and we've been chasing him ever since. Yeah. And there's other teams who come out here, and about halfway through day two, they're like, this isn't for us, and they leave. They don't come back. The cold weather gets to them.
Oh, yeah. Did you say you're in it to win it? Are you going for gold?
I wouldn't use that exact phrase, but yeah. Everyone's trying to get on the podium. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this 7 years. We've never cracked top three, and it's someone different every year. You never know what's going to win. You never know, like... We got a pretty good jump yesterday, like as far as the amount of work we wanted to get done. But we've had our butts kicked like every which way from Sunday, by guys on that last day. It doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish.
But the competition isn't only for professionals. Amateurs are also welcome to have a go at the event.
Oh, nice. Sure. My name's Killian Harnish, and this is Blockheads is the team name.
What are you guys trying to make right now? What is the end goal of this?
The end goal of this would be a snow globe.
Yeah, is this you guys' like first year doing this competition?
Yeah, first time. We didn't really know what to expect, but it's fun.
Yeah. Have, has have the older veterans been nice to you guys?
Oh, everyone's been super nice. You know, everyone shares tools with each other if they need them. Like, everyone helps each other, you know, giving tips before, you know, when we're eating breakfast and stuff. It's been a cool experience. Yeah.
They haven't been trying to intimidate you?
No, not at all. More being like nice and welcoming, wanting us to do, you know, wanting more people to do it. Cause in the past couple years, like what we've seen is like, at the beginning when they first started this, like not really many people did it, mm-hmm. at least at the amateur level. And then last year, I think there were 4 or 5 people, and now there's like 12 teams.
After 2 days of sculpting in the freezing cold, the competitors gather around on Sunday afternoon to find out the results of the competition.
All right, we're back here on Sunday, and what was your team name again?
We're Snow Van Gogh.
And what did you guys just win?
We won the People's Choice Award and 2nd place overall.
Wow. How does it feel?
It feels really good. This is the first time we've placed, and we just try to get better each year, so we feel like we're kind of improving, and there are a lot of great sculptures this year, so we feel pretty lucky to win a prize.
Yeah. How late were you out here last night?
Probably about, I left about 8 o'clock, and I think one of my teammates did a little later than that, so we put in a couple long days.
Yeah. Get cold last night?
It did. Once the sun went down, it got chilly, but we had to fight through.
Yeah, great. You guys, any last words you'd like to say?
I don't know, just thanks for coming out and covering the event, and we hope people come out and see it. It's always more fun when we have more people here to see what we're working on.
Cool. Yeah, thanks, guys. All right, thanks, guys.
For RCP, this has been Murray, Nathan, Chloe, and Miranda.
Now my mom's hearing me. Like, I hear her voice like, it takes 10 minutes to get frostbite.
After spending any amount of time outside, whether it be sculpting snow, shoveling, or just getting from your car to your house, you're probably going to need some hot beverage to warm you up. Well, here's Hannah Dove with her own chai recipe to keep you warm during these winter months.
Hello, and welcome to another special mini-segment of Cooking with Hannah. I am your host, Hannah, and today, instead of trying hilariously and ferociously bad recipes, I will be giving you a recipe of my own that will hopefully prepare you for the blustering outside. So make sure you stay warm with this chai tea recipe. First things first, what you do is you prepare the milk. And some of you might be thinking, Hannah, why are you making chai tea in a milk base? Well, this is because while you can put any old tea in water, you need a truly bold flavor in order to pack through these creamy milk bases. Any milk base will do. 1% low fat skim milk, or if you're vegan, oat milk works quite nice, as well as almond. Now, again, in order to have a very strong flavor, you must have a very strong tea packet. I suggest getting a spiced chai tea bag. I'm going to use a couple from Trader Joe's that I have found in the back of my cabinet. Tea never expires, or I hope it doesn't. So we're going to be using that. If you want a truly strong flavor, I recommend adding at least 2 tea bags, and that is what we will be doing for this session. Steep 4 to 6 minutes and then remove the tea bag. Now it is actually the sweetener that really determines the subtlety in this tea. You can add agave nectar, you can add regular sugar, you can add honey even, and sometimes I do prefer a slight twist of honey. But what I found works best is actually brown sugar, because brown sugar already has the molasses, it already has that zing, and so it fits quite nicely in our little spiced chai beverage. Now, as your milk is seeping in with the spiced chai packets, it is time to add a dash of each of these ingredients. Ground ginger, ground nutmeg, ground cinnamon, turmeric, pumpkin pie spice, paprika, star anise, and finally, some cloves. If you have a propensity for a certain spice, feel free to add more. If you dislike a certain spice, feel free to add less. Let it steep for a bit, and then you are ready to serve. All right, how does it taste?
Delicious.
And there we have it. With these simple steps, you too will be able to have a coffee house style beverage in the comfort of your own home. With RCP, this is Hannah signing off.
Besides warm beverages, human beings have been using saunas as a way to try to keep warm during winter. Liv Riggins talks about how people here in the Twin Cities are trying to keep the tradition of the sauna alive.
I met up with JP of Sauna Outfitters and 612 Sauna Society at the Hewing Hotel's new rooftop sauna on a 20 below zero night to find out more about Minnesota's urban sauna revival. JP started out with a sauna in his backyard that quickly drew attention and today is involved in multiple thermic bathing projects. I wanted to find out more about the ideas behind his projects and what it's like to be involved in a 170-plus member-owner co-op like 612 Sauna Society. JP emphasizes that thermic bathing, like the sauna, has taken many different forms in different times and places. For him, it's all about adapting to the needs of the users in that place and time.
A sauna is one of many thermic bathing traditions. From the Russians have the banya, the Japanese the onsen, the Turks the hammam, and in Central America the temescal, and of course the Native American sweat lodge. These are all part of a really ancient thermic bathing traditions. The cooperative and the rooftop of the Hewing, these projects are popping up in response to the needs of this community in our time. I think there's obviously the physical is always like, I think one of the reasons people come to warm up, to relax, just to feel those muscles feel better in their bodies, but then also coming together, and it's a really nice social experience where you can chat and be social, you can also not. And it's kind of a unscripted social space where I think people are able to use it for whatever their social needs are.
The co-op structure of 612 Sauna Society has a big impact on this social experience in terms of not just flexibility and dynamism, but also quality and warmth. It's not a typical consumer-producer relationship so much as a shared experience.
We have 171 members. So, you know, if there's something that could and should be better in there, you know, there's... Our owners are in the sauna every day, you know, and that's an interesting experience, I think, for people to find themselves not just simply the customers of, like, I paid for my thing, you know, give me my thing. It's like, you know, you're not in your backyard, but you are in your sauna. You are the one who is ultimately at the end of the one who can make it better and make it or make it worse. And I think building that into the experience itself also adds a level of accountability and warmth. It adds just kind of like almost a dimension of warmth, right? In terms of hospitality and in terms of, it's like inviting, the difference between meeting somebody in a restaurant and inviting them over to your home. You know, the food can be great in both, but in terms of just the feeling of intimacy and the feelings of what it means to be a guest, quite different.
The co-op structure is also a big part of creating a vibrant living sauna culture and tradition rather than just mimicking something else.
As a membership, we get to decide what is the experience that we want to share. So, you know, if I own the company myself, I would be, you know, answering that question and kind of like delivering that. But it's interesting to ask the question in community when it comes to a tradition that ultimately is serving the community, to ask the community, what is it we have to offer one another? And you know, I think that that's how traditions, you know, are really maintained, and how people become stewards of traditions, and how they remain very real and very relevant, and not some sort of like cute artifact of a time when we used to have traditions. Like they're actually doing something important. We're actually doing them. Very, very dynamic. Ideally, I hope that this can become a city where there are lots of different options. I'm trying to just enable, work with partners and, you know, friends and colleagues that want to kind of discover what some of those opportunities are here in the Twin Cities. So I'm not trying to like franchise one way of doing it. I'm trying to, you know, collaborate with people who want to have a lot of unique, special places that give us a really rich culture, our own rich thermic bathing culture, rather than like a lot of just the same thing. And that's what I like about the co-op is, like, you know, people are doing things and asking me to work on things that I hadn't even thought about before. You know, I would think similar. I'm not a musician myself, but the way I see, you know, really high level musicians working, right, where they're able, coming in with like a real, very real offering, but then they're working with people in a way that is adding dimensions and layers you couldn't have thought of at the beginning of their careers. It's really a journey. You know, I want to be on a journey with this work and with other people who want to do this work.
I asked JP if there's anything else he wanted to say, and he said that it's to get involved and try out a sauna wherever you are.
I just invite people to come down and enjoy it. So it's a really exciting time to be, you know, to be here. 612 Sauna Society Cooperative is doing reservations at the trailhead over Theodore Worth Park with ski trails. There's locker rooms and ski trails, winter bike trails. We're doing reservations for the rest of the winter every day. We also have some cool special events. We're doing a type of German steam called Aufguss. There's reservations on 612saunasociety.com. The Hewing Hotel, see you on the bench.
For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Liv Riggins.
Finally, when we think of winter sports, we usually think of skiing or snowboarding, maybe ice skating, but curling deserves a spot right up there along with the other winter sports. Ben Hallam has more.
Stones sliding across ice, furious brushing, the soft clink of one stone against another, and then the crowd grows wild. These are the sounds of curling. Curling is one of those sports that really only comes into the popular awareness every 4 years at the Winter Olympics. Aside from that, a lot of people, including myself, don't really know what goes on with the sport, what the rules are, or what it's like to play it. In fact, most of what I knew about curling could be summed up as ice and rocks. I didn't really know much at all. So when Real College Podcast decided to do a winter activities episode, I wanted to go and find out more. So I talked to Gretchen, the head of the Frogtown Curling Club, about the rules of curling and what it's like to play the game.
He said four people play another four people. Everyone throws two rocks. First person on the team's called the lead. They want to throw rocks kind of as guards or in front of the circles or the house. The second person on the team will come up. They'll throw two rocks. Their job is sort of to curl around those guards or maybe take out a rock that, you know, they don't want there. Third person, same kind of deal. They want to take out. They want to get ready for the last person to come up, who's the skip. And so you kind of make room so that the skip can throw one right in there and you'll be able to score. You just want more of your rocks in the middle. So your position on your team is kind of what is fun too. Usually on your team, you keep your position throughout the year. And I am throwing last rocks this year, which is fun because, you know, I'm the one who gets the last shot and the last chance to score. So for me, it's fun because, ooh, I have that chance to actually make the game turn our way. It doesn't always work out because, you know, the shots are hard sometimes. Sometimes the other team's goal is to make it hard for my shot to matter. So that's kind of what's fun. Like, every game is different. You know, every end is different. You play eight ends of curling, so you go back and forth four times. Every end is different. You could get 6 points in one end, and then you could not score another point the whole rest of the game. So it's just fun. It's just competitive, but not overly so.
Even though I might not have been that aware of curling, a lot of people are. In fact, the Frogtown Curling Club got its start as part of the growing expansion of curling in the Twin Cities.
Our club started 8 years ago. We were started as a practice facility for the St. Paul Curling Club, which is the largest curling club in the cities. They were full. The sport was growing, but they didn't have any room to grow. So Ramsey County came to them and asked them if we would open up. And then after a while, St. Paul didn't want to do it anymore, but the people at Frogtown did. So we kind of built our own club, converted an old hockey arena into a curling club, and it's been, you know, every year we add on to the club to make it a little more homier and nicer and not so much of a hockey rink. But the sport is growing so fast. We're one of eight clubs in the city now. We're full. We have over 450 members. We run a league Monday through Thursday. We have two draws on those days. We have three draws on Sunday, and we have a mixed league that's every other Friday. So really a lot going on because everyone loves to curl. Once you start, you get hooked into it and you just want to keep doing it. And it's a lot like golf, you know, you practice, but it doesn't matter because sometimes you get better and sometimes you just don't. Yeah, I just think anyone can do it. It's a sport that you can start when you're a teenager and you can play when you're 75. Certainly it gets harder older you get. I'm living example of that. You know, I'm still getting a little better every time, and that's what's fun. So I think what gets you hooked on it is that it's something that you can get better at, but you can also do it even if you're not good at it. You kind of think you're going to get better at it each year as you go on. And sometimes you do. Sometimes you practice and work hard at it. I'd say 80% of the people here just play the one day a week. You know, whatever happens, happens. They're here for the fun of it. It's really more of the camaraderie, and the after curling party is just as fun as the curling, because you're with your opponents. You all sit together at a table, share stories, and have drinks and food. And, you know, that's what's fun. That's why people love it so much. And you build great friendships too over the years.
Friendships and camaraderie associated with curling isn't just a local phenomena. It's part of curling culture as a whole. One of the most interesting aspects of curling, at least to me, was that even at the professional levels, players are relied upon to call their own penalties and to judge their own scoring. There's no referees. It's all agreement between the two competing teams. I asked Gretchen about this component of the game and how it affects the culture of the sport.
Yeah, they say it's a gentleman's sport where you do call penalties on yourself. If you hit the rock with your broom, that's called burning the stone. Usually you're the only one that knows you did it, and you do call a penalty because it's the spirit of the sport, not to really cheat. It's not like hockey where you want to beat up your opponent. You actually shake hands with them before the game, introduce yourself, wish them good curling, and then when the game's over, you do the same thing. Shake hands, say good game, let's go get a drink. That's the best part. I mean, we have so many new friends. My skip, Barb, likes to say every game of curling is win or lose, you make four new friends. So that's kind of the way I look at it, too.
It's this spirit of friendship and camaraderie that's behind curling's appeal. It's not the most well-known sport, or the most popular. It may not be the most well-publicized, and you may not see it on TV outside of the Olympics. But as a sport to be played among friends, curling has few rivals. For Real College Podcast, I'm Ben Hallam.
Well, that's all from Real College Podcast. Thanks to everyone who helped out on this episode: Murray Swanson, Ben Hallam, Liv Ringens, Nathan Furboy, and Hannah Dove. Real College Podcast is produced by Nathan Furboy, Ben Hallam, Lizzie Ritchie, and Liv Riggins. Alex Schumacher is the host and managing editor. All episodes can be found online at radiok.org and Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thanks for listening.